it will entertain, hopefully, but may also give some thoughts about how can we support our libraries to make sure those doors do stay open, and the fact that there are ways in which libraries are under attack.
That's Kate Quinn, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Kate Quinn is a New York Times bestselling author of historical fiction. Her previous books include the Empress of Rome series, The Alice Network, The Rose Code, and The Briar Club, among others. She joins us to talk about The Astral Library, which is a departure from her usual historical fiction. Kate, welcome to Conversations.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're known primarily for writing historical fiction, so this is a bit of a departure from what you would normally write. So what inspired you to write this sort of mystical book about a library?
I think, honestly, it was escapism. I came up with this idea in mid-2021. It certainly felt to me like the only escaping that I had been doing for the past 18 months had been within the pages of a book and absolutely nowhere else. And so at some point I ended up with, I think I was just walking the dogs one day, and it just popped into my head the sentence, what if you could walk into the world of a book and live there? And, you know, I really couldn't quite get rid of that thought. So I started playing with it and ended up taking it to my editor and my agent. And I did honestly think that there was about a 50-50 shot. They would just shoot it down and say, go back to writing historical fiction. But I think escapism maybe was on their mind too, because they ended up saying, you know, all right, it's different. It certainly is, but let's run with that. Let's see what happens. And so I got the green light and I was delighted.
Tell us about the plot of The Astral Library.
I like to think of it as my love letter to libraries, librarians, and the whole world of readers that I've been lucky enough to be part of my whole life. It is a day in the life of a very down-on-her-luck bookworm in modern-day Boston who, after losing her job, her apartment, and her identity thanks to identity theft all in the same day, comes to the library, which is her safe space, the place she feels at home, and walks through a door that she has never seen before and finds herself in the Astral Library, which is a sort of liminal space where all the books that have ever been written, whether they've been written yet or not, happen to exist. And this is a library where lost and desperate bookworms can be offered the opportunity to escape to new lives inside their favorite books. But before she can escape into the pages of her new life, Alex comes to realize that an enemy has appeared from the shadows to threaten whoever, the library and all the patrons they've helped protect. And so she has to decide whether to escape or to fight for the library and its patrons. And she has to, along the way, face some of her own demons and decide what kind of heroine she is capable of being.
So tell us more about Alex with an I.
She is, as I said, one very down-on-her-luck bookworm. She's aged out of the foster care system. She's now in her mid-20s, you know, barely keeping body and soul together with a series of jobs, none of which pay well enough. She's, you know, couch surfing in a friend's apartment and, you know, knows that any kind of better life is almost certainly not going to be a possibility for her. College is a pipe dream. She has no family, no support network. And, you know, life is hard. And for someone like her, libraries and books are one of the only things that can give her life any shape or pleasure. She's a bibliophile. She has known, you know, from a young age, you know, that people are never going to be there for her, but books are. And so libraries are her safe space, and very particularly the reading room at the Boston Public Library. And she is someone who, you know, finds herself a refuge in stories because real life has let her down so much. So the idea of a magic library, that door that opens for you, is an absolute godsend and the answer to all of life's prayers when that comes along for her.
Well, this story is told in first person. We get to know Alex as she tells her story about what's going on. Tell us a little bit about finding her voice and, you know, letting listeners into her personality.
Well, finding her voice, it was for me about having someone who, for whom, you know, books have done a lot of the shaping of her life. And that's something, you know, I was very much a bookworm kid. You know, like if you could plant me down somewhere with a pile of books, you could leave me there probably for days. And as long as I didn't get through all the books, I'd still be there reading, you know, by the time you came back. And, you know, for someone like that, you know, she's someone who, you know, absolutely consumes stories, reads everything, you know, has a massive vocabulary because she has been reading her whole life. And I liked the idea of someone who, when she does get the opportunity for a magic adventure, you know, that call to adventure that is the moment of the hero's journey, she absolutely does not have the moment of like the hero refuses the call. You know, she's all in. She has absolutely been waiting her whole life for that door to Narnia, you know, that yellow brick road moment to open up. And the moment that it does, she is absolutely game. So I really liked having the idea of a heroine whose love for books and whose knowledge of story, you know, she is someone who absolutely cannot be surprised by, you know, the beats of the hero's journey. She knows the story tropes, and she's absolutely the moment, you know, that fantastical door opens and she sees this new world. You know, she's all in, you know, she is locked, cocked, and ready to quest. And I really liked the idea of having someone who is absolutely game for the adventure, who wants to look around for those story beats, who is keen to have, you know, her mind absolutely blown by every new book world that she walks into.
Speaking of those book worlds, so many books in the world, how did you decide which ones to use for this novel?
A few different factors came into that. You know, I used the world of these books for, you know, scenes and for worlds that the characters could actually walk into. And for that to really work, first of all, I wanted to choose books that were as much a part of our national consciousness, not only for readers, but for part of the cultural landscape. You know, you don't have to have read a single word of Arthur Conan Doyle to know who Sherlock Holmes is and know at least a little bit about what that world looks like. So I was looking for worlds that, you know, as many readers as possible would be familiar with, you know, whether through high school reading lists or college literature classes, or, you know, helping your kid go, you know, do those reading lists, or, you know, seeing one of the movie adaptations or the TV show adaptations. And then it was important too that, you know, there had to be as much contrast as possible, you know, so that it's not all walking through Jane Austen drawing rooms. You know, it's going from worlds that look different from each other, but are still vivid and interesting and neat enough to serve as really interesting backdrops for, you know, the action that's unfolding in the book. And I wanted them to be books that I personally really loved as well. I mean, The Three Musketeers is in there because that's a book I absolutely devoured when I was in middle school. You know, Jane Eyre is there because that's my favorite gothic novel. You know, The Great Gatsby, you know, wasn't my favorite book, but, you know, that as a setting, you know, those 1920s West Egg champagne-soaked parties really can't be beat as a place where, you know, some action can unfold. So I really had fun picking, you know, books that would be well-known and that would have really vivid settings and that were, you know, personal favorites of mine that were fun to call out. And I also limited myself, you know, when it came to book worlds, to public domain books. And there's, you know, a whole plot point that revolves around that. And that's simply because, you know, I didn't want to get sued because, you know, copyright being what it is, you can mention the world's books and, you know, the writers who authored them. But when you start using those worlds as if they were your own, you know, as backdrops for a scene, that is where you can't do that legally unless the book is passed into public domain. So that's why a lot of books are mentioned in the Astral Library, which are not public domain, but the only ones that are walked around in are public domain books. And that is, that's, you know, partly also practical, but it did give me a fun opportunity for a lot of humor and jokes that revolved around copyright law. And you really can't pass that up.
Well, Alex's guide into the Astral Library is the librarian. Tell us more about this character.
Well, every great fantasy novel needs a mentor figure. And, you know, the Glinda, the Aslan, you know, the Gandalf. And so I figured there would be a librarian. Every library needs a librarian for another thing. And so I figured when I fleshed out this character, you know, she's very much a librarian with a capital L. It is a calling as well as a job title. And, you know, when you first look at her, she's really, you know, embodying the whole librarian cliche. She's a little old woman with a bun and glasses and sensible shoes and a cardigan. But I had a lot of fun making her more than that, you know. Like any librarian, she has power and she knows exactly how to use it. And she is someone who can help you. But on the other hand, she's not particularly, as she says right away, I am not the wise mentor figure. I am not here just to, you know, pat you on the head and pack your rucksack for your journey. You are one person among many who it is my responsibility to help. So she's acerbic. I had a lot of fun giving her, you know, some fun zingers. She is fun. And then she is also no one to mess with. You know, when you realize that there is going to be a fight on their, when they realize there's going to be a fight on their hands, Alex comes to realize very quickly the librarian is exactly who you want on your side in a fight. And I had fun sort of thinking about, well, what are the ways in which the stereotypical image of a librarian and, you know, the shush and so forth, what are the ways in which I can expand that with a little bit of a magical twist so that when you see a librarian in a fight, it is truly something to behold.
Well, and there is a fight in this book. As you mentioned, there's this malevolent force that wants to basically shut the library down and ruin this great experience that all these readers who have escaped there have. So what were you trying to sort of explore in terms of power dynamics with this conflict in the book?
Well, without giving too much away about the ending, I wanted to explore the idea that libraries, for one thing, you know, how special they are. They're not only repositories for books, they are sanctuaries. They are community hubs. They are places where, you know, so much more happens than just, it's just a place where books are held. You know, this is spots where if you're a student and you have nowhere quiet to do your schoolwork, you can go to a library. If you're a kid and you need somewhere to go after school lets out and before your parents get home from work, a library is where you can go. If you are unhoused and you need somewhere to get warm, you can go to a library. If you don't have access to a computer, a library is where you can go to use the public computers. If you are job hunting, this is where you can go to fill out applications and look at job boards. You know, there are community resources that are critical. And it is one of the few places in an increasingly monetized world in which you can go without the expectation of spending money to be allowed to stay there. And since libraries, you know, are not businesses, you know, they're not going to turn a profit, and yet they have to constantly worry about money to keep the doors open. And so I am hoping that, you know, if this book does, you know, does, it will entertain, hopefully, but may also give some thoughts about how can we support our libraries to make sure those doors do stay open. And the fact that there are ways in which libraries are under attack. They always have been. There are people who don't think that they should be unmonetized spaces, or who want to run them more like businesses, or who think that, you know, books need to be culled because they might be problematic, or who think that really these free resources for communities aren't things that should be funded. And these are ways in which libraries have always been, you know, under attack, and they continue to be, especially in this day and age. And so I would encourage everyone to think about how you can use and support your own local library, because, you know, definitely they require our support now more than ever.
One of the memorable characters in this novel is Bo, and I love that you made this character Bo Brummel. I thought that was fun. But you introduce through him fashion and sort of costumes, et cetera, et cetera. So tell us a little bit about why you wanted to introduce that character and introduce those elements into this novel.
Well, I did start to think as well when I was fleshing out the world of the Astra Library, is that, well, wouldn't they have a costume or wardrobe department? Because, you know, if you're going to be walking into the world of Sherlock Holmes's London, you can't do that in modern day jeans and a t-shirt. You're going to stick out like a sore thumb. So I've had the idea of, I think there would be a wardrobe department to make sure people are correctly outfitted before they head into a book. And that gate opened up the door for Bo. And I wanted there to be too, you know, a friend, a confidant, a lieutenant, someone to help Alex out when she is finding herself alone in this fight. And so that also was an addition to Bo's character. And I envisioned him as a costumer, and specifically someone who is, not only does he own a costume shop on Newbury Street, but he is someone who is fascinated by historical fashion. And this is something that I have spent so much time researching, because as a historical novelist, one of the first things you do research are, like, how are your characters clothed? What are the correct details of clothing that they would be wearing for their time and place? And I really fell down a rabbit hole at some point about the online world of historical costumers, which is really quite fascinating. I mean, there are people who, you know, absolutely are posting these beautiful pictures of, you know, the the gown that they are creating to exact historical specifications, which they are going to make from scratch and then wear to the Versailles ball in France. And, or, you know, they'll have videos about how it is that you can, you know, do the bone, sew a channel for the boning of, you know, absolutely period appropriate corsets. And, you know, I love when I can see people who are just absolutely unabashedly, giddily nerdy about some personal passion. And especially when it is, you're pouring so much time, so much skill, often you're recreating historical techniques in order to make these, you know, absolutely exquisite creations. And the clothes are beautiful too. So it's one of those things I just found, you know, really delightful to follow, to see people, you know, just absolutely geek out about, you know, the beauties of recreating historical fashion and wearing it and, you know, creating all this beauty. And I thought that would be a fun thing to bring to life in this book. And so I also had fun too, you know, gender flipping it and having, you know, the man for once be the fashionista and not always that it's the woman, then this is only a female pursuit. So I had a lot of fun with him, bringing him along on the ride. And, you know, he absolutely geeks out on the historical costumes he's seeing every time they jump from one book to the next. And he sees a different historical era unfold in the clothes around him. And he has a lot of fun with that.
Well, besides an engaging read, what do you hope that readers are going to take from the book?
I always hope first and foremost that a book entertains, you know, because that's the job of a story. It is, you know, I think it was one of my writing idols, Bernard Cornwell, said very accurately. It's like he said, at the end of the day, it's not your job to tell the whole history of the Napoleonic War or to evoke the absolute, you know, truth of a particular time and place. It is your job to entertain someone who just had a really hard day at work. And I do agree with that. And I do hope first and foremost that any book of mine entertains and takes someone away from whatever it is they need taking away from. But as I said, I hope too that people maybe give some thought to how to use their own local libraries and how to protect them and how books can be critical in making people think and in preserving ideas, and how free access to information and to books is, you know, something that is critical in any free society. So these are all, you know, thoughts that I think we can all usefully ruminate on in this day and age, and I hope that people do.
Kate, there's a question I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day in real life with one of the characters from your novel, who would it be and why?
I think I would love to spend a day with the librarian because, you know, she could introduce me to almost an infinite variety of worlds. And again, not to give away too much, but I would love to see a book dragon in full flight.
As we mentioned, you're primarily known for historical fiction, so this is a bit of a departure. Do you see yourself writing more books like this in addition to your historical fiction work?
Oh, who knows? I really have no idea. The next book that I'm writing is going to be back to straight historical fiction. It's pre and post World War I and does not have any particular fantastical elements. But will I go back to a world like the Astor Libraries and maybe dip a toe back into the world of the fantastical? I might. I might not. I'm not really sure yet. We'll have to see.
Well, this current novel is The Astral Library by Kate Quinn. Kate, thank you for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I'm so glad you're enjoying the book.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.